Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crummery. Thank you for tuning in. The Alaska House narrowly approved a bill today that would substantially increase state funding for public schools on a long-term basis for the first time in nearly a decade. House Bill 69 would increase the so-called base student allocation by $1,000. Lawmakers estimate it would raise public education spending by roughly $207 million next school year. Sitka Independent representative and former teacher Rebecca Himshute says it's an effort to find common ground with the governor and Republicans in the House and Senate's minority caucuses.
This bill is a wonderful compromise. Schools have been waiting. They have cut the fat. They have cut the flesh. And we are now cutting into the bone of our education system. It is time to act, and this bill provides that opportunity.
Boosting education funding was a key campaign issue for members of the Democrat-heavy majority caucus. Parents, teachers, students, and community leaders have pleaded with lawmakers to increase school funding for years. But Governor Mike Dunleavy has said on numerous occasions he would not support a bill that raised education funding without policy changes aimed at boosting student achievement. Majority lawmakers added a number of education policy changes to the bill after negotiations with the governor's staff. Most notably, lawmakers added a reading-focused incentive program. Republicans' opposition to the bill concentrated on a few key areas. Many, like Homer Republican Representative Sarah Vance, said they're not satisfied with the policy changes added to the bill.
I want to be clear. I fully support adequate funding for education in Alaska, but funding alone, without meaningful reform, is insufficient.
Dunleavy said last week, before the bill passed, that the House's changes represented, quote, positive movement, but he stopped short of endorsing it. His spokesperson did not return a request for an updated statement this afternoon. An apology to our live listeners. At our 4:48 newscast, yesterday's news aired instead. So here is today's news on the podcast. Thank you for listening. And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crummery. Thank you for tuning in. There have been a lot of protests at the Alaska State Capitol lately. Janet Lopez, a retired teacher in Juneau, says she's been at a lot of them herself because of big shifts at the federal level.
We're in a lot of trouble. We're in a lot of trouble.
Dozens of Juneau residents were at it again on Wednesday as Congress considers drastic funding cuts to Medicaid. That's the government-funded health care insurance program for low-income families and people with disabilities. And as KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, the cuts could jeopardize health care coverage for thousands of Alaskans and put rural hospitals at risk of reducing services or closing.
Standing in a crowd of protesters, Tamalivis Solanoa says Medicaid cuts could be devastating for her family.
If these cuts happen, I will have to start planning funerals.
Her mom has stage 4 renal failure, and her dad has Parkinson's disease. She's been taking care of them both since she was in high school. She says Medicaid is a lifeline for her family, and without it,
I will have to start either working more than two jobs I already do, I will have to figure out something else. So if I'm not able to provide for them, if there's no other way, then it's going to be the final nail in their coffin.
Congress is considering major funding cuts to Medicaid, the government-funded health care insurance program for low-income residents and people with disabilities. The spending bill comes from Republicans in Congress as a means to finance tax cuts proposed by the Trump administration. At stake is health care coverage for millions of Americans, including children, who rely on the program to get critical care. Joelle Hall, president of the state's largest labor union, says the cuts could have an outsized impact in Alaska.
This is Alaska to the core. We have the most expensive health care in the world. I want to say that again. If America has the most expensive health care in the world, and Alaska has the most expensive health care in America, ergo, Alaska has the most expensive health care in the world.
Alaska has consistently ranked among the top states in the country for having the highest health care costs per person, according to a 2020 study published in a leading health journal. Medicaid covers almost 40% of Alaska residents. It also helps fund tribal health care and is critical to keeping rural hospitals afloat. Cuts to the program could force the state to decide whether to maintain programs and shoulder the additional expense or leave people without coverage. Anchorage Democratic Senator Forrest Dunbar is the chair of the Health and Social Services Committee in the state Senate. He called on Alaska's congressional delegation to stop that from happening.
It's not just a question of economics. It's also a moral question, because they're not doing this so that they can lower the debt. They're not doing this so they can fund other programs. They're doing this to fund a tax cut for billionaires, and that is morally wrong.
U.S. Republican House Representative Nick Begich voted in favor of a spending blueprint last month that would significantly cut down on government spending. President Trump has said the cuts won't affect Medicaid, but budget experts say it's impossible to do such significant cuts without reducing health care coverage. In a speech to the Alaska legislature last month, Begich said he would support adding work requirements to Medicaid. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski has long been a defender of Medicaid and has been talking to Senate leaders about the impacts to Alaska if programs are cut. Last week, Senator Dan Sullivan told the Anchorage Daily News it was too early to comment on what could happen to Medicaid, but he did introduce an amendment to a Senate resolution aimed at improving Medicaid for the most vulnerable populations.
When healthcare is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When healthcare is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And President Trump issued two executive orders on March 1st to expand logging in national forests. They come after he suspended the roadless rule, which lifted the ban on new road construction in national forests. Together, the orders could increase timber harvest in Tongass National Forest. But as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, some locals aren't so sure.
One of the orders aims to get forestry projects approved more quickly, even if it means undermining environmental laws. The other order looks at whether importing lumber is a national security risk. The Tongass is the country's largest national forest at 17 million acres, and it's one of the last protected temperate rainforests in the world. Locals say it has environmental value, but the main reason the orders probably won't lead to more logging is that much of the industry moved out long ago. Joel Jackson is president of the Organized Village of Cake, a Tlingit tribe on Kuprinoff Island, and has seen logging come and go. In economic terms, Jackson says the real value of the forest is in tourism.
People want to come from down south and look at a scarred landscape. They come up here because they like to look at the Tongass, the wildness of it.
They come to see the environment that his village depends on.
Berries and medicinal plants and just everything that it provides out there. And the animals, the deer, moose, bears, the shade from those old growth trees along our streams that the salmon return to every year after year.
He says that now, since most lumber yards and pulp mills have closed shop, it's costly for loggers to come harvest the trees and ship them out. Jackson says Trump's orders won't change the financial constraints of logging in the rugged and remote southeast region. Gordon Chu runs Tenneke Logging Company, a small father-son timber operation on Chichagof Island. He echoes Jackson's sentiment and says the industry would have to be completely redeveloped for the Tongass to deliver more timber.
We don't have people sitting on their hands that can't wait to get into the forest and mow down all the trees.
Chu says he's an environmentalist. His company sustainably harvests about 100 trees each year. They're second growth, young trees that have grown back in areas that were heavily logged in the past.
We live here in the heart of the Tongass National Forest and don't want to be a part of any deforestation or destruction. So we've always only purchased selective timber sales.
The Forest Service marks out one out of no more than three trees. Then Chu and his son carefully fell them by hand. He's not convinced that Trump's executive orders will accelerate logging in the Tongass, especially since the Forest Service is likely overwhelmed due to recent firings.
They're dealing with distraught human beings that have been, like, cast aside. So I know the hope was efficiency, but you don't get more efficient with fewer people doing more work.
If the administration is serious about increasing timber production, Chu says they should go through Congress to streamline the approval process for small, sustainable operations like his.
You can still have industry and do it responsibly.
Viking Lumber, a well-known logging company in the region, did not respond to a request for comment. Robert Venables is the executive director at Southeast Conference. He says there is room in the Tongass for additional logging, especially in second growth areas. But it's unlikely that the industry would scale up to the behemoth it once was.
I believe it's more likely to colonize the moon.
Legal battles over logging in the Tongass roiled during Trump's first term, and more could be on the way. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced Tuesday that all recently terminated probationary employees would be rehired with back pay starting Wednesday. That's to comply with a March 12th deadline imposed by an independent federal board. The Merit Systems Protection Board ordered the department to temporarily reinstate the roughly 6,000 USDA workers who've been fired in recent weeks. That total reportedly includes more than 3,400 federal service workers, a USDA branch with an outsized footprint here in Alaska. Matt Brossard is with the union that represents federal employees nationwide. He says the fired workers will be reinstated on paid administrative leave for now.
So they're working on a plan to get them back in their normal positions and off of administrative leave immediately.
But the reinstatements are temporary. The Merit Systems Protection Board acts as an internal court to consider federal employees' complaints against the government. Last week, the board found that the firings had likely been illegal and ordered USDA to rehire the workers for 45 days while an investigation plays out. In the weeks since the terminations happened, some employees may have made other plans or moved on. Brossard says the workers are being automatically reinstated, so if they no longer want the job, they'll have to resign.
You know, we could have had people that moved away because they couldn't afford to live where they were and they moved back home or, you know, out of Alaska or wherever they were working.
Communities across Alaska have been protesting federal firings in recent weeks, especially within the Forest Service, which is a major employer in many Southeast communities. Among other things, employees work to maintain the Tongass, the nation's largest national forest. And the likelihood of an Alaska volcano's explosive eruption not far from the state's largest city has increased, according to researchers. Officials with the Alaska Volcano Observatory reported Wednesday morning that flights over the volcano on Friday and Tuesday detected increased gas emissions from Mount Spur, about 80 miles west of Anchorage and the closest active volcano to Alaska's population centers. The gas emissions showed that new magma has formed under the volcano, which, quote, indicates that an eruption is likely but not certain to occur within the next few weeks or months. Mount Spur remains in advisory status as it has since October. Though the eruption has the potential to temporarily impact air travel, officials say they don't anticipate widespread impacts. You're listening to KTOO. For more news, visit ktoo.org. Thank you for tuning in.